We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm so happy to be here with Brian Kelly on such a beautiful day. This is Jane Duker, and I periodically am on KMOX on Friday afternoons. I do the roundtable with Mark Reardon, and then we do some fun stuff in the 3 o'clock hour. But once in a while, I like to come on Sundays and do some interesting stuff, and I got a jam-packed 2 hours for you. We are going to lead off with County Executive Steve Stenger, who's going to update us on the year that has been the PDMP, which is the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, that was started by St. Louis County when the Jefferson City Legislature refused to enact one statewide. We're the only state that hasn't enacted one. So I'll be excited to have County Executive Stenger on to give us the results. Also, we're going to be talking with the Executive Director of Launch Code, which is a phenomenal program in St. Louis to start creating jobs and creating skills for the new tech economy that we're living in. And so I'm excited to have Jeffrey Mazur. We're also going to get, I'm going to give you a Greitens update, a recap on all that is Greitens right now, because there's so much going on. It's hard to kind of figure out where everything is. So I'm going to try to at least give you an update on impeachment, criminal, everything that's going on. And then in our second hour, we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about sort of leading into spring, summer in St. Louis. Spring has started a little late because of the cold weather, but now we're just starting to get into the season. So we're going to talk about new attractions at the Boathouse in Forest Park. I'm really excited about that. We're going to talk with the everything that's all about the arch and the riverfront. We're going to be talking with the executive director of the Arch City River Foundation. And then finally, we're going to have one of my favorite people on, George Mahi, who is the dining editor at St. Louis Magazine. And we're just going to talk like St. Louis food. So you cannot go wrong with that. And I always have to talk food and wine. And so having George is like my spirit animal. So I'm excited to have him. So let's get started right away. And on the phone, I have County Executive Steve Stenger. How you doing, County Executive?
Jane, I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me. I always love hearing you on the radio.
Oh, thank you very much. All right. So Jefferson City failed to act. So St. Louis County led the way on the opioid crisis by enacting its own PDMP. Explain to the listeners real quick what the PDMP does.
So the PDMP is a prescription drug monitoring program. And the primary goal of the PDMP is to reduce the number of people who misuse, abuse, or overdose while making sure patients have access to safe and effective pain management. So basically what the database does is allows doctors and prescribers, it gives them information about whether individuals might be, for lack of better terminology, pill shopping.
Yes. And so we enacted, so St. Louis County had to lead the way. Missouri was the last state in the union who did not have a PDMP. And so St. Louis County, so I understand that once you went online, that a lot of other jurisdictions have joined our database to even make it more effective. And at this year anniversary, where do we stand with how many people have joined and how much of the population is covered?
Yeah, well, one of the number one priorities, and there were several number one priorities, as there often are with something this important. One of the big priorities was to make the database joinable by other jurisdictions and easily joinable. So basically, the only thing that a jurisdiction would need to do, another county, another city that would like to join our database, is to just pass an ordinance that allows them to join. We enter into a very basic contract with them, and now they are part of the database. So since we started, we have 59 jurisdictions across the state. We have 79% of the population of the state covered and 92% of all providers in the state. So in effect, it has become a virtual statewide program at this point. We really want to get that last 21% of the population covered, because they are in some key areas, and those key areas are on our border counties, which is sort of a dangerous situation because, there are individuals that go back and forth perhaps from different states into those counties. and can still pill shop. So we're trying to get them as we speak. We have an effort going that is attempting to get everyone, you know, quite literally everyone in the state covered by this database.
Now, now you're looking back over the last year. What are you finding? What has the first year of the PDMP sort of told you?
So we're finding that first of all, the primary goal of the PDMP is being met. We have physicians and pharmacists that are using the PDMP. They're using the database to identify patients that need assistance for prevention of substance abuse or treatment of an existing disorder that they have. So the primary goal is being met. And what we found is that approximately 21,000 controlled substances are dispensed daily from jurisdictions currently participating in the PDMP. And an average, because remember, we're a very large county of 1 million people, an average of 5,200 of those are dispensed daily in St. Louis County. So given that large volume of prescriptions and actual pills that are being provided to individuals, this database, you know, the importance of the database has been really highlighted even further.
And so are you able, this kind of information, does it provide you information on which drugs are being prescribed and to whom so that we can start, you know, directing resources and knowledge toward things that will help the opiate crisis?
It does, you know, and to give you some further information about what it's demonstrated, in the past year, the PDMP multiple provider episode alert mm-hmm. has generated for 13,974 patients.
Wow.
You know, that's statewide. The multiple provider episode alert generates when a patient has filled prescriptions written by three or more prescribers that are filled at three or more pharmacies within a six-month period.
Wow.
So that's a little technical, but, the idea of it is that that's what we're trying to avoid, that multiple prescription situation. And
it alerts the physician, right? It tells the physician, look, this person might be pill shopping or might be opiate, you know, and so that
the
doctor can provide better care.
Yes, so the alert is generated to all prescribers that the patient has filled prescriptions from and is displayed on the patient report. So,
prevented some prescriptions from, you know, from being, you know, administered to someone who may be in trouble.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you know, it's different in every situation, and in every case, there are those, you know, the frontline service providers, medical providers, and they have the information. They have really the best information and the best knowledge of the patient. So they make those determinations of whether, you know, whether it was a false positive or it was an accurate positive.
Now, and then are you also able to see trends? So how is St. Louis County doing as far as, you know, the rate of opiate prescriptions?
Well, you know, it's data from the last three full quarters of the PDMP operation are available. Because, you know, we've been up and running for 1 year, so we have data for the first three quarters, which makes sense mm-hmm. because that's, you know, the data is accumulated and verified. So in that 9 month period, the St. Louis County opioid dispensation rate was 628.4 opioid prescriptions per 1,000 population, which is significantly lower than the overall PDMP opioid dispensation rate, which is 668.8 opioid prescriptions per the 1,000 population. So St. Louis County is actually doing better than the rest of the state with respect to the volume of prescriptions that are being written on a per 1,000 population basis.
Now, one thing that's confused me was that there was some sort of executive order issued by the state regarding, you know, drug prescriptions. Can you tell the listeners how does that differ from the actual PDMP database that we have based out of St. Louis County?
So the database that we have in St. Louis County was developed using best practices all across the country. And it is what is known as and what has been sort of termed in the nomenclature is that we have a complete database. You know, our database offers the complete service, the complete breadth of service that a database should offer.
Okay, that the experts say we need. Okay.
Yes, exactly. I mean, what we're looking for is that number one goal of, you know, we're trying to eliminate to the extent we can pill shopping. But unfortunately, the database that was that was the subject of the executive order that came from Governor Greitens is a database that doesn't really do that. It doesn't really attempt to really even address the issue of pill shopping, which is what really our everyday concern is. So it's not what would be termed a complete database with that complete breadth of service. It's really sort of targeted at manufacturers and
providers.
Those types of concerns. Yes, it doesn't really address that key issue of trying to avoid multiple
the user
multiple
and trying to figure out who the users are and why they may be using
right.
them. And interesting.
Ours is patient focused, and really the governor's is what I would say is either provider or manufacturer focused.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and congratulations. I mean, this is a big step, and I'm glad that somebody stepped up. We've all had people that we care about and love that have been victims of this crisis, and I appreciate you stepping up.
Well, thank you for that, and I'll tell you, it is a very important step, and it's important, I think, that we led the way in St. Louis County. You know, it is just one facet, though. It's just one tool that we have to combat this epidemic, and we will continue to maintain our database. We will continue to make it grow, and we want to see the whole state covered by this database.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great day. And next,
thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Next, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to have the executive director of Launch Code, Jeff Mazur, in to talk about coding, which I don't know anything about, so I'm really excited to have him. So this is Jane Duker, KMOX, at your service. Welcome back this afternoon. This is Jane Duker on At Your Service, KMOX. And last segment, we talked to the county executive about the successes surrounding the PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. And so now I'm really thrilled to have the executive director of Launch Code here, Jeff Mazur. And he's going to tell us all the great things that are happening at Launch Code. And for people like me, unless you consider Twitter, coding, I know nothing about coding. So the beauty of this is this is a program that really is trying to reach out to the community, teach people, fill jobs, fill a need in the labor market. And I'm excited to have you come and tell us about it because I know nothing about coding, but I want to learn and it's our future. So welcome.
Thank you, Jane. It's great to be here. And you just stole all my thunder.
I did.
You took all the hype.
All the good stuff.
Giving people the code, giving people jobs. But
these, which are all great things.
We like to think so.
So how was Launch Code founded and why?
Sure. So Launch Code was founded back in late 2013. We're not quite 5 years old. Jim McKelvey, who's mm-hmm. a St. Louisan, who, among other things, was a co-founder of Square, the mobile payment system company, is a St. Louisan and wanted to try to build a piece of his business, that business here in St. Louis. That's now a business that's worth billions and billions of dollars.
Right.
That exists largely on the West Coast, some jobs here in St. Louis. But he was trying to build a development center, a place where people who were writing code for Square could work here in St. Louis back when the company was starting up. And he was stealing talent from all over, from other companies in town. And even while he was doing that, found that he couldn't find enough capacity, enough talented people to grow at the rate his business needed to grow in order for him to persist and maintain that development center here. And so ultimately said, hey, we can't make this work. Got to move all that component of what the business does to the West Coast. And the rest is more or less history. But that for him sparked this idea of why does it have to be that way?
Right.
There's lots of people in St. Louis that have capacity, have talent, have ability to do work like this. Many of them already have skills, but for whatever reason, they're not getting linked up with the jobs. They're not getting that opportunity to step into these high-capacity tech jobs of the future. So he decided to do something about that.
And so it's about, so you match people. So if I already had coding skills, which mm-hmm. I understand that Twitter, just me tweeting, is
right.
not a coding skill. So, but there are people out there who do have skills. Yeah. And like you say, they aren't getting matched up with employers. But then is there an ability and, can you mm-hmm. talk about how if you don't have the skills, but
sure.
you're looking to acquire them because clearly the labor market is demanding these kind of skills.
Sure. Yeah, two great points there, Jane. The first is that there are people who have these skills. And one of the great things about coding and about tech is that there are ample ways for people to have developed these skills on their own outside of the usual kind of credentialing tools that exist, be it a university or other places. So while the means of developing skills has evolved to a place where people can get these skills all sorts of different ways, the tools that hiring employers often use to determine who's ready haven't evolved quite so much. So oftentimes they're looking and they assume that someone needs a college degree or a computer science degree in order to do well at these jobs. And that's just not true. So one of the things LaunchCode started with and continues to do is identifying those people and validating their skill, even if they don't have the typical markers of a computer science degree or those usual credentials, and then linking them with employers who do that.
And the employer looks and says, okay, if LaunchCode says this person has this kind of skills, then we kind of know. Yeah. And so they feel better that they're not, you know, that they get an alternative way to
Absolutely.
Find the skills.
It's about someone having validation and a common evaluation that we can use to say, this person, despite the fact that they don't look like the person who typically, historically has gone into these jobs, has the skill to do it. And we can demonstrate that objectively here. Now, give this person a try and let them, you know, see what they can do. And you're going to find that this is a great way to tap into a pool of talent that's great, that's going to allow you to grow your business that you weren't tapping into previously. So that's one core. That's where the organization of LaunchCode really started, was doing that.
Identifying and matching.
Exactly. And, okay. and validating skill. And then shortly thereafter, you talked about the other key piece here, which is how do you get people skills that haven't had access to skills yet? There are lots of barriers historically to getting job-ready skills in coding and tech. And that's because traditionally we've talked about the traditional model, which is, you know, go to school, pay for a mm-hmm. four-year degree, get a computer science degree, get an engineering degree.
They come on campus and they find you and, you
exactly.
know, it's not like that anymore.
Exactly. And
not in this field, too.
Well, right. And we contend that it shouldn't be like that, that there's a much broader way to find people who can do this work. But historically, that was the way that you made your way into this field. And one of the things that LaunchCode said was, well, those are awful high barriers for somebody who perhaps doesn't have the financial capacity for a four-year degree, who perhaps isn't interested in waiting 4 years to get to a place where they
and
can provide for their family.
Taking a lot of classes that might have nothing to do with the skill set that might be needed.
Absolutely. And then add that to the fact that many four-year institutions, you went to college, I went to college. College is a great thing, and I would encourage people to go if they have the opportunity. Large institutions of higher learning don't necessarily turn on a dime and change their curriculum to reflect changes in the hiring world very quickly, right?
Right.
And that's true of the computer science field as well.
And it's moving so fast. I mean, technology.
So quickly, exactly. Yes. So there are lots of reasons why the four-year model of someone going to school, putting money down up front, essentially cash on the barrel head to buy this skill that maybe doesn't track really well to what job-ready skills in the field are mm-hmm. today, and then taking a gamble that 4 years down the road, someone is going to pick you up and make this worth your while. That's the traditional model. And for a lot of people, that's just a bridge too far. If you don't have the capacity to pay, if you don't feel like you can enter the risk of going into debt to get the four-year degree, if you've got other responsibilities that preclude you from going into what is essentially a full-time proposition where you're going to study for a number of years, and at the exclusion of other things, at the exclusion of other work or taking care of family, doing other things, that's an awfully high barrier to get over. And so LaunchCode said, it shouldn't be that way. And so let's do this different. Let's provide people skilling in code. Let's teach them to code for free. Let's do it in a delivery model that allows them to learn even if they have other responsibilities, if they're working
Flexible.
During the day. Exactly. Let's do classes in the evening. The
in-person online,
classes.
I saw.
A portion of all of our curriculum is hosted online. There's an in-person component to all of our classes, which we think is critical. But the idea is the in-person component is in the evenings, two nights a week. You're doing 6 hours a week in class for 20 weeks. You're doing probably 12 to 15 hours of work a week outside the classroom that you can put wherever in your schedule it works. So all of a sudden, whereas before to learn to code, it was plunk down a bunch of money, spend a bunch of time, do it at the exclusion of everything else, and do it for a number of years, to do this for 20 weeks, do it for free, and do it on a schedule and timeline that fits your life and fits the other things you have going on. All of a sudden, the risk profile of trying to step into this field is changed tremendously. Before, you had to put so much and gamble so much, and now the LaunchCode model is that you basically have to gamble nothing in order to take a walk down this road and see if it fits for you, see if you're good at it, and see if you can make a career out of it. And we think that's a really dynamic thing.
Awesome. Okay, we are here with Jeff Mazur, who's the executive director of LaunchCode, and this is so exciting. And I think we're going to take a small break, because when we get back, I want to hear about, I think you've got some classes coming up.
Yes.
That people, and anyone can do this. And that's
sure.
that's what we need to, you know, explain to people. And in poking around the website, which I really strongly recommend you go look at, figuring out how to adapt this to just about anyone is pretty amazing. So we're going to take a quick break. And on the back end of that break, we'll be back with Jeff Mazur. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX.
Get ready for the Cards and Cubs tonight. Ameren Total Access 610. First pitch 7:05. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
And we are back at Your Service, and I'm Jane Duker, and I am thrilled to be here and joining you from the 1 to 3 o'clock hour on KMOX, and I am joined by Jeff Mazur, who is the Executive Director of Launch Code, and in the last segment, we kind of talked about how this was needed and how there really wasn't the niche was not being filled for what we need in tech capacity for our future, and so I was looking at your website, and I saw some estimates of the number of jobs that will be needed in this sort of tech and coding arena that may not be filled if we don't start training some people. Sure. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics has some really compelling data that talks about by 2021 that there's likely to be 1 million-plus jobs in technology in and around coding that are unfilled if we continue at the current rate. And that's a function largely that about 500,000 of these jobs come open every year. There are a bunch open right now, 600,000. And even as 500,000 of these jobs open up every year, you've only got about between 50 and 60,000 people who are graduating from four-year institutions with computer science degrees or electrical engineering degrees, information systems degrees. So you're never going to the extent you rely on the traditional means of filling these jobs, you're never going to fill the gap. It's going to continue to grow. And that's why.
And we're leaving jobs on the table, which is nothing anybody wants in this country.
Absolutely. No. And that's national numbers and 1 million-plus jobs. Even here, you know, look at it. You don't have to look very far back into the news headlines here to talk about, you know, we saw a few weeks back Sheila Sweeney from the St. Louis Partnership talking about one of the reasons for the HQ2 application for St. Louis not being selected as one of the 20 semifinalists. And you know, the response there, unsurprisingly, is there's not ample tech talent in the region and there's not a blueprint for building that in order to support something like Amazon. Not that Amazon HQ2 is the be all end all, but it's also
an
indicator. Yeah. So when we look at St. Louis and we look at just labor statistics and say, okay, what number of coding and similar jobs do we expect to have in this market based on total employment in the mm-hmm. market? And we're about 5,500 jobs below what you'd expect just based on total employment. And
so we're just leaving that on the table.
Those are jobs that if we had the talent here, if we had those people with those skill sets here, more businesses would come. More businesses that are already here would be able to grow. And you know, the growth and the economic development that would happen as a result of having those skills would be meaningful to the region. And so that's one of the reasons why at Launch Code we're committed to
filling the gap
and trying to better identify the problem for people, really put a finger on it and say, it's easy to say that we've got a tech talent gap here and just have that be
an
amorphous kind of idea without anything attached to it. What we like to say and try and do is attach some numbers to this and say, these are things that are achievable. These are things that are gaps that are fillable if we think about them and think about how we can actually fill them. I think sometimes people just want to wave their arms and say, well, we can think about the fact that there's a gap and maybe higher ed will fill the gap on its own. You know, maybe these things will solve themselves over time. That doesn't happen.
We have to be. Okay. Yeah. So here, I'm part of the problem. I'm an old person and not that old, but old enough when you talk about tech talent. And let's say I want to change my career. I'm late in my, you know, career. I'm sick of my career. I'm sick of being a lawyer. So I want to be a coder. I mean, can someone like me be a coder?
Absolutely.
How would I learn?
Yeah, we see it all the time. People of all ages have used Launch Code's free training programs in order to build skills that get them new careers and new jobs. That's what we're all about. You know, the fat part of the bell curve in terms of the people we've served historically in our classes is really like 25 to 40. And that's not old by any means, but that's just the middle of the curve. That means there's plenty of people over 40 years of age who've gone through one of our programs and whom we've placed into a first job in a tech career. So
how do I join one? Tell me about what do you guys have that if I want to do this?
Applications are open right now here in St. Louis for three different opportunities, two different classes. LC101 is our flagship program. It's a 20-week part-time program where people are in person in class 6 hours a week. It's two evenings a week for 3 hours and doing 12 to 15 hours of work a week outside the classroom. And over the course of that 20 weeks, someone will get the skill from ground zero all the way up to a level of readiness that will allow them to step into a junior developer position with a Launch Code employer partner. That's totally free. And applications are open for that class now. And that class will begin in mid-July. Two different sections. There's about 150 seats in each one.
Wow. Wow.
One at Launch Codes Mentor Center, which is at Del Mar and Euclid, just at the northern terminus of the Central West End. And then the other cohort will be running at St. Louis Community College's Center for Workforce Innovation, which is North County, 270 and West Florissant Road. So two different locations for people who are interested in taking the class to sign up. And then the other opportunity is our Coder Girl program.
Sounds really exciting.
Yeah, Coder Girl is great. It's career-focused coding and mentorship for women by women. So across eight different specific technologies, women can apply for this program and go through a six-month, one night a week, basically classroom learning experience, and then spend a few months after that building the other components of job readiness, including building a project that they can show off to employers and really polishing their resume so that they're ready to either step up within an existing position that they're in into a new role, build a new skill, or step into a new career altogether.
Is there a gender gap in tech?
Of course.
Yes, and that's what we're trying to build.
Absolutely. I think that over history, there's been these preconceptions about who a coder is and what sort of person is a software developer. We think all those things are wrong. We think that the capacity and ability to do well in this work is distributed equally across all demographic groups. It's just that opportunity hasn't been distributed equally across.
Well, in education and knowing. So sure. If you are interested in this, I mean, I wouldn't know, okay, well, where do I go to be a coder? I mean, you do look at sure. college sort of curricula and you think, well, it's not really job ready. You know, it doesn't look like that. So now if people are aware of this program, they can say, okay,
sure.
I can start in young girls. How old do you need to be?
Yeah, no, I mean, any age and the median age for Coder Girl participants over the years is like 38 years old. So though the name is Coder Girl, Coder Women may be a more appropriate name. Because, you know, it's not just focused on young people. This is focused on people across the age spectrum, wherever they are in their career. And we see that all the time, that this is an opportunity. And many times, and it may be that many women who, you know, knew 20 years ago that they were interested in this, but there was no easily identifiable pathway to do this. And so what Coder Girl does is provide mentors and women who've gone through this difficult process already and who can share their own experience in a meaningful way with other women.
Show them how to short-circuit it and get to the point.
Exactly, Jane. To understand not just what the technical components of readiness for a job are, but all the other challenges that you're going to face as a woman who's trying to break into this career in technology. And having that my wife, Mindy, is fond of saying, you know, if you can't see it, you can't be it.
That's right.
And providing that example and showing someone whose life experience looks like yours, who has gone through this difficult journey on their own already, and to share their experiences with you is a powerful thing. And that's one of the things that makes the Coder Girl program, I think, if not unique, at least very powerful in the lives of the participants.
Well, and the fact that you realize that you've basically married over your head because your wife is an extraordinary woman.
No question.
You get points for judgment, clearly. I mean, being one who married over as well, I totally get where you're coming from. So now, in just sort of the last minute that we have together,
sure.
Give me some of the stats. I mean, I've seen on the website, you know, the people you're placing, the people that are going through classes. Give me some numbers. I like to hear
the
impact.
So over our organization's history, just, you know, 4.5 years, more than 4,600 people who've gotten a skilling or who've gotten some sort of training through Launch Code. We're up over 1,130 people whose careers we've started through one of our placement or apprenticeship programs in the organization. And that's growing every day. So, you know, the first quarter of 2018 was our biggest quarter we've ever done in terms of placement. 94 people started their careers in tech in the first quarter of 2018 through Launch Codes programs. And so we're just looking to grow that further and further. We know that for us, outcomes and success means success in people starting new careers and doing things that are fulfilling and that give them an opportunity to really gain access to the economy, access to the middle class, and true upward mobility. So we feel good
Launch
about
Code
all that.
It's a nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit, yes.
So how are you funded?
Yeah, so we generate earned revenue from placements. We have employer partners who pay us for the talented people that come through our programs to place them in jobs.
That's great.
And then we are a nonprofit, and we seek philanthropic support from foundations, from corporate supporters, from individuals that help pay for that free education. We have the funding stream, the revenue stream that's attached to doing placements of people into jobs, but we provide that training free to participants. So there's no funding stream there beyond the good nature of people to put money into support.
And you've got some great corporate sponsors.
Absolutely. We've got so many here in St. Louis that have been incredibly supportive of what we do. Boeing, Monsanto, so many of the civic organizations that we think about when we think about St. Louis industry. But other companies, up-and-comers too, like Boundless, a geospatial company that just moved its headquarters here from New York and has been a huge supporter of Coder Girl. MasterCard has been huge over the years. We've got St. Louis companies like 1904 Labs and RGA and others that are supportive of our programs, like our Geek Gala, our annual event.
And it's called the Geek Gala.
Geek Gala. I've got my Geek Gala shirt.
There you
on
go.
Right here.
See that in and of itself just makes me want to go.
Well, listen, you should
I'm
come.
A, you know, it's funnier than a geek.
Be a guest speaker this year, Jane.
That's right. Funnier than a geek is a geek wannabe. So I'm sort of in the geek wannabe phase, but this is, you know, this is part of my journey is learning here.
The St. Louis community has been incredibly supportive of Launch Code, and we can't do the things that we do there without the support of the community. We're grateful for that, and we're looking to grow that because we know that the problem persists, and it's only through investment and participation by a much larger group of stakeholders that we're going to solve the problem here in St. Louis.
But you have statistics. And so for somebody like me who's interested in looking at a nonprofit or, you know, knowing that, hey, these are the exact results, these are the goals we have, and we're meeting them in these ways. So that's really impressive. And so Encoder Girl it's a great thing because as a woman who's in a male-dominated profession, it's challenging. And we need ways to help build the ladders for these young girls, you know, taking different, you know, turns in doing the tech. So if I'm a coder, I mean, I'm getting back to way basics.
Sure.
Just give me an example, a practical example of what I do. So I go in and I do programs to do what?
Yeah, sure. Well, there's all kinds of things. I mean, so much every company of what every company does these days is tech enabled. So, you know, it may be that you work in fintech and you work on a application that this financial company uses in order to serve its customers. And you may be working on pieces of the back end that customers never see, but that help the business run.
Generate reports and teach. And so you're actually teaching the computers to give you the information you
helping
want.
Helping these applications both use the consumer on the front end, use the application, and have that attached to the business of the organization on the back end in the way that serves the business's needs. So you may be doing that. You may work entirely on front end. You may be building the components of a website or an application that people are actually using, that they are interacting with on a day-to-day basis. You may do other things. One of the things that we did, and there's a little segment around this, was the St. Louis Cardinals. They needed a new piece of software to determine these complex tax calculations that they have to make about paying players because they have to follow the tax rules of all the places where they play away games. And they were doing this partially manually in a way that was very time-consuming. And Launch Code came in, and one of our developers and one of our apprentices built this new piece of software that the Cardinals use to manage their payroll and pay their players. So cool.
That's
things like
exciting.
That.
That's exciting. Well, Jeff, I could talk to you all day and because I am a geek wannabe, but this is Jeff Mazur, who is the executive director of Launch Code. And thank you for everything you're doing. I think this is phenomenal for St. Louis.
It's a great pleasure, Jane. I would urge people if they're interested and they want to apply for one of the classes, they could go to launchcode.org/learn, LEARN, and apply for LC101 or Coder Girl and see what other things we have to offer.
Great. Well, I hope you'll come back soon and let us know how you're doing.
I would love to, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, come back on in the next segment. We're going to do something a little bit not as nice. We're going to get an update on the Greitens, everything that's Greitens. So come back. This is Jane Duker, KMOX, at your service. Welcome back. This is Jane Duker, and we're at your service on KMOX on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. Hopefully you're outside with your earphones on listening to me, cutting the lawn or doing yard work or just hanging out and enjoying. I mean, this is about as good as it gets in St. Louis. So hopefully we'll get this sort of spring pre-summer for a while now. Seems like we've started late and it was such a cold spring. So now that it's starting to get warmer, I think people are starting to realize that summer is coming, which is great. So I'm excited. Our next hour, please join us again because we're going to be talking about sort of all that St. Louis in the summer. We're going to be talking about all the new stuff going on at Forest Park, everything from canoes to kayaks to those stand-up paddles. I'm really excited to talk to Rao Yowitz at the Boathouse Pedal Company, and he's going to tell us about all the developments going on at Forest Park. Then we're going to talk to the executive director of City Arch Foundation, Arch River Foundation, excuse me, and he's going to tell us everything that's going on at the Arch. So, you know, everything's getting done down there. They're doing the museum's going to be opening soon. There's a ton of events. And, you know, the riverfront is open for business and open for fun. So I can't wait to hear all about that. And then finally, we're going to close with one of my dear, dear friends. And I want to be, you know, him and Kat Neville. These are like my two most favorite people because they're the dining people in St. Louis. And we are such a great foodie town. And I think we're underestimated for that. And so I'm excited to have St. Louis Magazine's George Mahi here, who's going to come and tell us about everything that's opening and closing. And I can't even keep up with all of it. So I have St. Louis Magazine, so I have to read, but then I need George to explain it to me. So he's going to be here with us in the second hour. So I thought what we would do for the close of this hour, I mean, it seems to be dominating everybody. People are probably getting a little Greitens, you know, fatigue, me included. However, you know, it might be good going into, we're starting jury selection in the criminal case for the invasion of privacy claim down in St. Louis City. So I thought this would sort of be a good time to give you a recap of what all is going on where, so that people can sort of distinguish what's going on and how each part of this process plays into the greater picture. So, first of all, we have the criminal proceeding that's going on in the city of St. Louis, and that's a criminal prosecution. And right now, the first case going to trial next week is the invasion of privacy, where the governor is accused of taking a picture of a woman scantily clad or partially nude or fully nude without her consent, and that picture being transmitted, and it's a felony. And so jury selection for that case is starting this Thursday on the 10th so that they can start for trial on Monday the 14th. So that's out there. So then we also have in the city of St. Louis, we have another criminal proceeding that's going on, and it's tampering with a computer. And you may have seen a lot of coverage about The Mission Continues. And that was the nonprofit veterans charity that the governor started before running for governor. And whether a donor list from that charity was improperly used to help fundraise for his gubernatorial campaign. And the attorney general and the circuit attorney's office did a joint investigation and figured out that that this list was improperly taken from a charity. And so they have the city has charged the governor with tampering with a computer. And so what that basically is you've accessed computer data and you've used the data to your benefit. And there's a value over $500. And what's interesting about that is, and what most people don't know, is that that issue was the subject of a Missouri Ethics Commission complaint, whereby someone complained and said that the governor was improperly using another sort of source of information, and that information should have been disclosed as a campaign donation. That happened more than a year or so ago. Well, there was a settlement with the Missouri Ethics Commission and the Greitens campaign where they acknowledged using the list, and they valued it at about $600, and they paid a $100 fine and moved on. Well, as time has gone on and new information has surfaced, they have determined that obviously the list is over $500, which is needed for a computer tampering felony, and that that it was against the will of the charity. And there's a lot of evidence of that out there. So that case is not yet set for trial. So you have the criminal proceedings. So those are sort of the pending criminal proceedings. There is also an investigation of the Mission Continues and whether there was lying to the Ethics Commission. And that evidence has been given from the Attorney General of Missouri, who is of the same party of the governor, and given to the prosecuting attorney in Cole County, which is in the seat of Jeff City. So the Cole County prosecutor is sitting on that case, whether there was lying or improper information given to the Ethics Commission. Okay, so now we have a whole nother proceeding, which people have been reading a lot about, which is the special committee of the House. And there was a committee unanimously, like nothing happens unanimously in Jeff City anymore. Republicans, Democrats, there's one guy who's voted no on every bill just because he just wants to vote no on every bill. And this was the only time he basically voted yes, was to investigate these charges to determine whether under the Constitution, whether the governor should be impeached. When the people passed the Constitution, part of that constitutional process is if there is something that would prohibit the governor from effectively leading, whether he was, convicted of crimes, whether he's accused of crimes, whether, there's all kinds of ways you can be impeached under the Missouri Constitution. Well, the House is discharging its responsibility under the Constitution to investigate and determine whether articles of impeachment should be voted out of the House. And the way that works is, under the Constitution, the House is basically like an indictment. It's almost like the House is a grand jury for determining whether the governor can continue to sit. And what they do is they've taken evidence, then they're going to determine, and they've voted again to open, three quarters of the House and the Senate have voted to have a special session in order to determine whether articles should issue. And so they're doing the investigation. They've done one House report that interviewed all the witnesses having to do with the sex scandal that is pending as part of the invasion of privacy case. And they did a report recently on The Mission Continues. And the House is continuing its investigation, but they're going to determine whether articles issue. If articles issue, then many argue that he loses his position instantly upon impeachment. Some argue that you have to wait until the second part of the process, which is the Senate part, where they have to pass via, you know, through the Senate, seven eminent jurists who will basically sit as judges to determine whether he should be convicted. So that process could take all summer. And remember, the attorney general is still investigating Confide. And now we have WashU and the Templeton Foundation determining whether the governor used grant money improperly for campaign purposes. So hopefully that gives you a little overview of what's going on. And we're going to be back with much more fun stuff on the other side of this break. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX. This is Jane Duker at your service on KMOX. And now we get to talk about how the seasons have changed. I think people are starting to realize finally that we're going to get some warm and nice weather. And this is probably the best weather we get in St. Louis. And in that vein, we were hoping to talk to someone from Forest Park about the new paddle boats and canoes. And hopefully we'll get him. But in the meantime, let's talk everything riverfront and arch. And so today is a perfect day to be down on the new riverfront. And I am very excited to have the executive director of, and I want to make sure I get the foundation name right. So let's see. We have the executive director for the City Arch River Foundation. Is that correct?
So we changed our name last year to the Gateway Arch Park Foundation.
Oh, that's nice. That's easier.
What we found is that was, you know, really easily understandable to everyone in the region, as well as when we're out nationally talking with people, that they really, when you say the Gateway Arch Park Foundation, they go, oh, that makes sense. I know who you are now.
That is very good. Well, you are the executive director, and I'm excited to have Eric, now I'm going to say it right, Morchesky?
You got it.
All right, I did it. Okay, good. So I'm very excited by that. I've been worried about that all morning. So let's talk about everything that the Arch. I mean, obviously, the Arch grounds and the riverfront has gone through an incredible transformation. So can you give our listeners an update on where we are on the transformation, sort of where what we've gotten done and what is still need to be completed?
So all the grounds are open to the public right now. We are really just setting up for July 3rd when we have our ribbon cutting of the new museum and visitor center. And I think what people are going to see is historically everyone came to the Arch and then they went somewhere else. They maybe went to the Cardinals game, they went to a Blues game, and they had lots of fun at those other places. Mm-hmm. People are going to be coming down for longer because the new museum, the new park are just so absolutely incredible.
That is great. So after all this time, just in time for, I'm assuming we're going to be doing the VP fair and everything down there. And so it's a perfect time to reopen.
Yeah, we cut the ribbon on July 3rd and July 4th. Fair St. Louis returns. And I think they're going to announce their lineups this week. So I think everyone's getting really excited for the summer to come.
Oh, that's great. So tell me a little bit about the foundation. From what I can tell, you guys basically sort of organize everything that is Riverfront Park, because you have a lot of different agencies and projects and things going on. And are you sort of the bridge and the coordinator of all that?
So we really started out with this idea that we would run a design competition, and that would kind of be what our premise was initially. And when we got through the design competition, what we found was someone needed to manage the private funding as well as make sure that we maintained it in the years to come. And so once we really established ourselves in 2009, we saw a great opportunity to raise the private funding. So we raised about $250 million to help build this project. And then we are here to make sure it's activated. We would hate for the people of St. Louis to pay for all of this just so tourists could enjoy it. So that's a lot of our events and our activities are really about giving the region a reason to come back down and fall back in love with the Arch and the grounds around it.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, so let's talk about some of the exciting stuff that's going to be happening. One thing I know that I've been hearing a lot about is hashtag Your Arch. So explain to everybody what hashtag Your Arch is.
Yeah, so we wanted the public to be involved in our grand opening. And so we've really been working for the last several months trying to figure out the best way to make sure, you know, your memories are a part of our grand opening. And so what we found was, you know, a hashtag with hashtag Your Arch allowed people to, on Instagram and Twitter, tag their photos, and it builds into a photo mosaic that we will release at the grand opening. So as a part of our experience at the grand opening on July 3rd, we will have everyone's memories being shown. And I think it's a really fun way for us to say, we have had 52 years of amazing experiences here, we can't wait for the future to come.
And so all anybody has to do is go search all your pictures. I mean, who in St. Louis does not have pictures of the arch? You know, people in, people, and even friends and family that you know have come in. And all they have to do is post it to Twitter or Instagram, and then you are pulling those pictures so that we can have a St. Louis or a montage of everyone enjoying the arch throughout the years.
And that's exactly it. And you can also go to yourarch.org if you don't have Instagram or Twitter and just upload it directly to the site. One of the fun things for me, I've worked here for just over 2 years now. My parents lived here in 1976. Mm-hmm. And after 2 years of working here, we launched this campaign on Friday. My mom sends me a photo of my mom and dad at the arch in 1976. They hadn't sent it the other 2 years that I've been here.
Oh, isn't that funny?
You know,
but now it's there.
Yeah, exactly. So it's uploaded on the site, and it's just really fun. I mean, even my own family is getting involved.
That's fantastic. Have you got to look at some of the pictures? Are they incredible?
They're awesome. I mean, it's so much fun. We see people posting it from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. You know, so you get all these different, you know, outfits in there. You get
sure.
all these different views. You know, I saw a photo the other day of, you know, looking down from the top of the arch in the mm-hmm. 70s. And so Keener Plaza was half parking lot at that point.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just
things
funny.
Have
it's
changed.
The old Busch Stadium. So, like, yeah, it's really fun to see the evolution of downtown St. Louis as a part of it even.
So this is good. So, yes. So you have to upload your pictures, go to the website, anything so that we can make these memories better. Okay. So tell me some of the other stuff that's going to be happening. I mean, I know a lot of events are coming. Give me some of the ones that are coming up soon.
You know, the ones that are coming up in May, we have Keener Kids, which is free to the public. It's our partnership with the public library, and it's story time. We also bring in yoga instructors, so it's very much like a mommy and me yoga experience. If you register ahead of time, you actually get a free gift bag with it. You know, a lot of our events are free to the public because we want this to be a park that's used by everyone.
Now, I've done yoga under the arch.
Okay.
Will that be happening again?
Yeah, I believe it will.
Excellent.
Yeah.
No, it is kind of awe-inspiring to be doing yoga under the arch. I mean, I'm not even one of the huge yoga people, but I love looking up and being right there. So that's good. So we've got some kid events. What else is coming?
So we have every Tuesday morning, we have our health and wellness series, which is yoga in Keener Plaza.
Oh.
Again, free to the public, starting at 7 a.m. On Wednesday evenings, we have high-intensity workouts in Keener Plaza at 5 p.m. And so, you know, if you're not a morning person, or if you want to come actually break a good sweat on a day where it's 80 degrees outside, you know, it's a really fun way for people to come down and enjoy the park. Then we have, if you're just not into the exercise, you don't have kids yet, mm-hmm. we also have Keener Cocktails.
There you go.
There we go.
That's, let's see. Okay, what does that look like?
Something for everyone.
Yes.
So Keener Cocktails is a really fun event. So for $20, you get to come in from 5 to 7. You can drink as much as you like, responsibly, of course.
Of course.
Pirano Pizza is there, free of charge, too. So you can come in, you can eat, you can have a few drinks. Just sit outside in a beautiful park. We have a DJ or a live band out there at every one of them. So you've got some music going on.
When's the next one of that?
The next one of that is May 24th.
Excellent.
And so it's just a really fun way to come out. You know, we all enjoy going out to the many great establishments around town. Four Hands comes in and brings some of their beer down. We've got some of the local distributors bringing in different mixed drinks. It's just a great way for us to
experience. And you can go to KeenerCocktails.com. If you want to learn more about that, because they'll have one in May and one in June, right?
Yeah, and so really the easiest way to find out about everything is archpark.org. That's our website. You can go in. It has all of our events. It's a good way for us to really enjoy ourselves and make sure that you know everything that's coming. Or the other great piece that we just launched a month or so ago, we have a new app. If you search Gateway Arch or Gateway Arch Park in the Google Store or in Apple, you can pull up our app. It has all of our events. It has the best places to park in downtown. It shows you what the cost of each of the
logistics.
Parking garages are.
All
yeah.
logistics.
You can take photos. There's a filter for photos on it. There's just a lot of really fun things for you to do. And so you can buy your tram tickets if you want to go up to the top of the arch. Plan your whole experience. And so it's a really great app for us to be able to use in downtown.
Well, thank you. Eric Warcheski is here. Do you mind sticking around to talk a little bit more about the arch grounds?
Let's do it.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we're going to talk more about the riverfront and the arch. This is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX.
St. Louis's drive time traffic every 10 minutes, mornings and afternoons, KMOX.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is a beautiful Sunday. I'm looking out the window and seeing all the beautiful weather and sunshine, and I'm excited to be joined here by the Gateway Arch Park Foundation Executive Director. Eric, thank you for coming in. We were talking a little bit about some of the events last segment, but now, so if I want to walk, and everyone needs to know that, if you want to walk from Keener Plaza down to the Arch, you can now do that, and it's all open, and everyone should do it.
Yeah, so it's completely open, and not only can you walk, we've put it in that you can go without taking a stair for that whole pathway. So if you're pushing a stroller or if you're in a wheelchair, you can actually have an accessible pathway from the riverfront to Keener Plaza, which never existed before.
That's fantastic, and I think that will make it more accessible, and it makes you moving from the Arch to Keener to City Garden. Everything now starts to be walkable, which is what, you know, we've been trying to work toward.
It really is. And yeah, we have a very, you know, walkable downtown. You know, we like to talk when we're talking to national media about how easy it is to get around St. Louis, 15 minutes from the airport to downtown. You know, you can get pretty much anywhere in 15 or 20 minutes. And so when you have a New York writer come in, you can't go anywhere in New York City in 15 minutes.
So that's exactly right.
They're just blown away.
That's right. Now, and we were talking last segment, and I want to remind everybody to be part of history and to upload any pictures you have of the Arch, your family, friends, any memories that you have in the Arch. You need to upload it to Instagram, to Twitter, or even the website, hashtag your Arch, because it would be fantastic to have all the memories of St. Louisans and be part of this, you know, grand opening and part of this, you know, rich new future for the Arch.
Yeah, so it's your memories of today and your memories of 50 years ago all combined into one. And so we're really excited. It's just, it all loads into this mosaic that, you know, is our new, I hate to break it because, but you can kind of see it when you go onto the website, mm-hmm, of our new entrance and in our new, you know, new Arch experience. So really a fun way to do this.
Okay, so we know that the VP Fair is going to be down there, and we're going to be getting announcements on that pretty soon. One thing that we didn't discuss last segment, which I'm fascinated about, is Blues at the Arch. Tell everyone, because that's new, and tell us about what that's going to be. It's going to be later in the summer, but you know, everybody needs to put it on their calendar for August for Blues at the Arch. What's that going to be?
Yeah, so Blues at the Arch is our partnership with the National Blues Museum, and they curate artists. They bring in a local act to open and a national act to close it. We get Grammy Award winners playing down there. I got really excited to see Lucille, B.B. King's guitar, get played at it the one year. I mean, just really a fun experience. And so we do that in the North Gateway right up next to Eads Bridge. So you've got the Arch as a backdrop, Eads Bridge as a backdrop. And our first year we did it, we had about 4,000 people come in. Last year we had over 18,000 people
Wow.
show up. It's just beautiful. You can come out, bring your picnic basket, your bottle of wine, and just sit out in the park and just have a good experience. It's free of charge. It's just a really fun experience. And we are starting to see people coming in from all around the country just to come see these, whether they follow the artist or whether they're just excited for this beautiful venue.
And it's free of charge.
Free of charge.
So we have it in, it'll be Fridays in August, mm-hmm, right? August 3rd, the 10th, the 17th, and the 24th. So
correct,
everyone needs to put that on their calendar now, and we're going to have good weather, and it's not going to be 850 degrees. I think I'm going to just predict that now. I could be wrong, but
all of that is 100% correct.
That's right. That's exactly right, and that's fine. So one thing that people, and I know that you have coming up a members-only brunch and preview that's coming up Saturday, let's see, May 12th. And so this is a really good incentive for people to actually join. And, you know, because one, all of this goes toward maintaining and keeping our Arch as a beautiful place, beautiful park that it can be. And so that's one of the reasons, because they have some member only benefits. And so tell me a little bit about those and how you would join and what it's for.
Yeah. So our membership program was put in place when we started out with this project with both the city and the federal government. Our obligation was to build it and to maintain it with them. And so we're not here to go away anytime soon. Our agreements are in perpetuity with the federal government, which, mm-hmm, is a scary word to a finance person like
there
myself.
Yeah, I would imagine.
You know, we want to make sure that if you come on July 3rd for the ribbon cutting, or if you come in 2022, you have a beautiful experience and that you don't walk away thinking like, oh, like it's gotten a little worn out. We're here to make sure that our park and our city have the funds necessary to keep these at an A-plus experience for everyone. And so really important to us, and the way that we can do that is by having the funding available. So that's really why we created a membership program last year. And so we've created some of these fun events like a sneak preview brunch that allow us to keep maintaining the park and really keep a beautiful experience and give you some fun ways to do something that no one else can.
Exactly. And there's all kind of membership levels, right? This isn't like, you know, all neat guys. And I'm sure you have plenty of big corporate sponsors, which is great. And I'm sure you're grateful. But everybody can join and it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah. So your membership starts at $50 and goes up from there. At the $100 level, you actually get into all of the Keener Cocktails events free of charge.
Okay, so that right there is basically worth it.
Yeah, yes, so absolutely. But you also then get the parking, you get tram tickets, you get discounts in the gift shops. You really get a lot of stuff there. But we've really just tried to make this accessible because it's really the first time ever people have become members of the Arch. Right. You know, we're all members of Forest Park or the Botanical Gardens or Tower Grove, and we have so many amazing assets in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. We've all become members of the zoo, and so it's really a fun thing for us to really re-engage the public with the Arch.
And to maintain it, which is incredibly important. And we did talk about, too, so there are fitness events that are now being incorporated into the Arch, and we talked about some of them. There's the Keener, there's going to be yoga, morning yoga, mm-hmm. boot camp, so Keener Plaza, because now they're all connected. I mean, now people need to start thinking about these things in terms of being all connected. But those are in Keener Plaza.
Yeah.
And that's great.
And we've got, you know, people coming out of the hotels, coming and taking part in these. We've got people coming down from work to take part of them before work, you know, or after work. It's really just a fun way for us to, you know, tie locals and people coming in from outside of the region and together and having a fun time in different ways.
And in the fall, you're going to have Arch Bark?
Arch Bark with Royal Canin. It's really a fun way for us to bring people out into the park and bring your dog. We have a pet-friendly park. We get a lot of phone calls about it. I think every single person in our office has a dog, so we saw it as a great opportunity.
Dogs are welcome.
Yeah, dogs are welcome. We want
That's
your dog out there. Yeah, so it's just a fun way. You know, we all have our furry friends, and so, you know, bring them out. Let them come run through the park. We have 5.4 miles of new trails in our national park right now. And so it's just.
And where do the trails go? Tell me a little bit about that.
So they run around the park. And so, you know, if you want to come down and run your own 5K in the park, you actually have plenty of space to do it in. So you've really just got a lot of space for yourselves to come enjoy, whether it's for a run, a walk, a bike ride with the new Lime bikes. You know, there's just it's built so that you use it.
Now, tell me this, because, of course, I'm a St. Louisan, and I've been to the Arch a couple of times, but it is amazing how, you know, you're here that sometimes you forget, and you say, you know what, I need to go back. So I know that they've not, you and I talked about, there isn't restoration needed on the outside, but you did do some restoration and upgrading on the inside. What was done there for the trams?
We did, yeah. So we changed out the mechanicals in the trams for the first time in 52 years. So it was...
I support that. Yeah. Is it a little bit smoother now?
Bi-State, who runs the trams and the park service, do a great job of maintaining and making sure that those were still a fun experience for everyone. You know, we talk to people and, you know, the trams up are part of your experience, right? It's not just a view from the top, which is spectacular, but you also, it's almost like a roller coaster when you're going up and you're coming down. And that's as much as anything, is what we hear from someone who said, oh, you know, I haven't been up in 30 years. They talk about the tram rides and they talk about all of it. But for those of people that also, one of the things that we put into this project is part of our accessibility component is if you're afraid to go up or you can't go up, you actually have a Keystone exhibit directly underneath the Keystone inside the museum that will have a live feed running, showing you the views to both sides, both Illinois and St. Louis. So it'll be the first time ever we have cameras at the top of the arch that are giving people a live feed. So we've really kind of got a lot of fun things coming in that people can enjoy it and make sure that everyone gets to enjoy it.
So we're going to have fireworks at the arch again.
Fireworks, an air show.
It's all coming back.
It's all coming back. We're going to have a lot of fun down there.
I mean, it's been nice at Forest Park, but it'll be, I mean, that view is international of fireworks over the arch. So I'm looking forward to that. And so, I mean, were there other upgrades in the park, sound, all kinds of different things that people can now enjoy some of the events that normally go on down there?
One of the key things that we've put in is event power throughout the park. And so that way we don't need as many generators down there when we're doing stuff, so that it's more of a plug and play experience when we're doing our concerts down there or whatever else.
Oh, great. Makes it more seamless and easier to host different types of events.
Yeah. And we've also as a part of our projects, we've actually brought a few of them in under budget. And so we're right now upgrading the park, taking some of those funds back and just trying to provide a better user experience. So we will be offering free open access Wi-Fi throughout the park. I believe we'll be
there. There you go. Yeah. There you go. There's a headline right there. That's fantastic. You can go and sit in the park and surf the web and hang out on your iPad or your computer.
Hashtag your arch. You got to have connection, right?
Got to have connection. Well, this is so great. Well, I am so happy. And this is Eric Worcheski of the Gateway Arch Park Foundation. And so really, I recommend that you go to their website and give the website name again.
Archpark.org.
Yes. And join and commit to our arch and go see all the incredible events that are going on down there. I wish we had more time because I could talk about it for a long time. But get down there. Today's a beautiful day. Start today and then keep going to all the events. So this is Jane Duker and KMOX at your service.
Get ready for the Cards and Cubs tonight. Ameren Total Access 610. First pitch 7:05. Hear it here on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals. KMOX.
Good afternoon. This is Jane Duker, and we are on At Your Service. And the last segment was great because we were hearing all of the phenomenal things that are going on at the Arch. And so I urge you to go to the website because there's a lot coming. And everything from, you know, July 4th VP stuff to the opening of the museum. So I highly recommend that. So that was really fun to talk to him. And also, do not forget to upload your pictures to, and I almost forget the hashtag, isn't that terrible, hashtag your arch. So get all your family photos, get everything out there so we can really turn that into an incredible St. Louis montage of pictures involving the arch. One thing we were going to talk a little bit about was some of the new stuff that's happening at Forest Park. So, you know, how everybody, you can go to the boathouse and you can do the paddle boats, the kind with the pedals, and I've done those, and but they're making it better now. Now, Sugar Fire is now at the boathouse serving food. So, I mean, you just can't really go wrong there at all. That's incredible. But also now it looks like that they're going to be renting paddle boats, canoes, the extra big paddle boards. And I think they're going to have the stand-up ones where you can stand on the, it looks like a surfboard. I mean, I'm sure there are people who are skilled at doing this. I'm not. But that you can stand on them and paddle and go through right there at the boathouse. So they're really sort of enhancing the experience at Forest Park and the boathouse. So that's really exciting. We were hoping to have someone from the company Boathouse Paddle Company, but they were unable to come. But I urge you to go to the website and I urge you to go to the boathouse in Forest Park as, you know, we're changing seasons now and it's starting to actually look like spring and summer. And so all of this, you know, phenomenal stuff is going on around the area and we wanted to focus on some of those. So another thing that we wanted to chat about was some of the new restaurant openings and closings. And so if you go to your St. Louis Magazine, the April 1 issue, then you can see that the dining editor there has sort of outlined some of the big stuff that's happening. And so some of our favorites are closing. Some great stuff is opening. But here are some of the restaurants that have closed. And so while March 2018 set a record for restaurant openings in the metro area, there were 26 of them. A number of those were offset by, you know, some pretty big closings. So let me give you those before I give you all the good news on what's opening. So the Purple Martin, which is on Shenandoah, that closed. Snarf's on Del Mar. Five Bistro on Daggett. Milagro Modern Mexican on Allen Street, it closed. Doocracy on Del Mar closed. The Dorset Inn, for real, on Dorset, that closed. And then the Damun Oyster Bar, they announced an April 8th closing and they have closed. So now, but as you know, St. Louis is an incredible foodie, wine, spirit town. And so, you know, we've always got a ton of restaurants opening. And so I hear some of the good ones. I'm going to give you some of the names of some of the ones that are set to open so you can start, you know, getting excited about what's going to be coming. We have a place called Aromas Restaurant and Sports Bar and Grill. That's going to be on Washington Avenue. And let's see some of the other ones on this great list. We have Bloom Cafe on Oakland. That's opened. We have Circle 7 Ranch on Manchester Road. Great place. Right up the street from my house in Chesterfield, there is, in, I guess, Town and Country technically, on Clayton Road near 141, Circle 7 opened its first, you know, restaurant. And it's, what's exciting about it is they have the beer taps at the table. And so it's kind of interesting. But they opened a new location on Manchester, and it's spectacular. It's huge, and it has TVs, it has outdoor seating, it has great new food and drink and exciting new drinks. I've been there once. I highly recommend it. Let's see. Scarecrow, Weber's Front Row, has opened off way in West County, too. That looks really exciting. Let's see here. This list is really, really amazing. We have a place called Barrio, which is at the old DeMunn Oyster Bar location. That should be coming. Let's see here. The Boathouse, we've talked about that, and that's going to be that's Sugar Fire, which is incredible. We have, let's see, some of the ones in May. The Shack, that's going to be 12521 Olive in mid-May. That's a new one that's opening. Let's see, Soulard Euro, that's going to be coming in early May. We have 311 Winehouse Bar Beer. Blah, let me try again. 311 Winehouse and Beer Garden, and that'll be in St. Peter's. That's far way out there. That's kind of an interesting one. It's a great list. I highly recommend that you go to the St. Louis Magazine article in of all the. It's called the Ins, Outs, and Almost in Metro St. Louis for the food. So as you know, St. Louis is a hotbed for good food, and so, why don't we take a short break? And on the back end, we're going to be talking more fun stuff happenings in St. Louis. And this is Jane Duker at your service, KMOX.
More local reporters, more local news. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. KMOX.
Good afternoon. It's Jane Duker again on At Your Service. And I am so excited to have George Mahey here. He's the dining editor for St. Louis Magazine. So I was talking a little bit. I did sort of steal a little bit of thunder because I talked a little bit about what's closed because we just want to put that behind us.
And sure, absolutely.
You know, and they're sad. But then, and I talked a little bit about what's opening. But you know what? I am not the expert. So we are here with the expert to tell us what's exciting and new.
And you talk about the closings. It doesn't take you long to talk about them because there are so few.
And that's good.
And openings, there are always 3 to 4 to 5 times as many openings per month as closings. Always, always, always.
Isn't that amazing?
And people think, oh, the restaurant you hear about, it's
crashing.
It's crashing and it's horrible. Yeah, we hit the bubble.
It's not happening. You're not seeing that at all.
No, I'm busier than ever. I mean, they're coming fast and furious. I was asking you in the break when we spoke last because I think it was before this in March. We set a record in St. Louis for restaurant openings.
Isn't that fantastic?
And this is independents, not Jimmy John's. These are independent places. There was 26 openings and 4 reopenings.
Isn't that something
literally every day.
Now, and it's important to let people know because I use it. It's the dining guide, and it's literally the Bible of food because, you know, you're always roaming around and you're like, I want to go get something to eat. And you end up going to the same place because you're in a neighborhood and you're like, what's near here? And instead of looking at Google, we need your guide.
We do a dining guide you can find it online too, but it's a lot easier. And it just really serves a different purpose because we publish it as well. So you can keep a copy at home.
Yes,
you can keep
one
in the back seat of your car, which is where I have one. Because, you know, literally you get into a neighborhood and you go, man, I really like some Mexican food. And I forget the Mexican places in this particular neighborhood. And the dining guide is done by neighborhood.
Huge.
All over town.
Huge.
East side, west side. And it's also done, it's cross-referenced by price point. So you can
even
say,
better.
I'd like a really nice Italian place in North County.
Or I'm grubbing out, I need something
casual. Anyway, so that's something that's it's accessible online. But again, you can buy this. I think it's like $3 or $4 a copy by calling the magazine.
It's worth every dime.
I always carry copies with me because it is the Bible. I mean, as people go, this is the coolest thing ever.
All right, so where do I want to go in April or May? What are some of the new places that you think look really exciting? Because I was sort of eyeballing the list and there were some like Circle 7. I've been to the new one, which was great. But what are some of the new places that you think we ought to try?
There are several that opened in April that are, you know, contenders for maybe best new restaurant
of
the year.
Give me
really,
some of them.
Really cool places.
All right, let's highlight them.
One is called The Bao, B-A-O.
Okay.
It's in Clayton. It's in the former Coastal Bistro space, right there on Central, right on the main drag there. And Bao are Chinese steamed buns. And these guys have made you have a steam bun at a dim sum place or, the little fold over ones you see that are stuffed with goodies. Well, these guys have done, kind of Americanized it a bit, and they've taken this steam bun dough and turned it into, they shape it into like a hot dog form, and they have a lobster roll steamed bun. It's awesome.
It's totally creative.
It's completely creative.
But still accessible.
And, right. It's not too weird, and it's not, they've got some.
Because I'm kind of provincial.
Well, and they've got, some traditional, I would say, stuffings and ingredients, but also some very basic ones. They've got a soft shell crab that they put between. It looks like a hamburger bao, if you will.
Okay, I could eat that.
They're open right now. They're just open for breakfast and lunch. I think they open for happy hour this week, and they will soon be open for dinner. But the breakfasts are awesome. I mean, they've got something called bao skits and gravy.
Okay, I could try that.
Are you ready for that?
Try that.
And it's really good and really popular, and it's fun to say.
All right, give me another one.
There's a place called Good Fortune.
Okay.
That is...
I hadn't heard of that one yet.
Yeah. That one's in Botanical Heights. It's on the same corner. It's right across the street from Olio and Elia.
Okay.
And across the way from Chouquette. It's like the hot corner.
It is.
In St. Louis. It's in Botanical Heights.
So how do they fit in? What kind of food? What kind of place?
This is... it's a riff on Chinese food, but it's very approachable, and it's, again, not too... They've got fried rice. Everybody loves fried rice.
Right.
And they have a killer fried rice.
Oh, good.
They've got a mushroom dish that they make with Hen of the Woods mushrooms that I think's the best appetizer I've had in town so far this year. I mean, it's that good. But it's really kind of a different... These guys are... This is the guy that started Strange Donuts, so he's a pretty cool, hip guy, great marketer. He's with a guy named Ryan McDonald, who's a great chef. Anyway, the two of these guys put together a really cool place, and you look at it from the street, and it looks like it's all glass. It just looks like a Chinese pickup joint. There's two or three chairs, and you go,
what is this about?
Where's the restaurant?
Right.
Well, you walk in, and the restaurant is, down
the
hall and around the corner.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's in the back, kind of hidden, which is what this... So it's really two different businesses. It's a takeout business, and it's a sit-down business, but...
So don't be deterred by the front.
Like, I got the wrong spot,
That sounds like awesome.
That can happen.
All right, give me another one.
Here's one that's...
We're doing the lightning round of great food.
Well, this one's a reopen, and this is a total no-brainer. This is the one that everybody knows about. You ever heard of the Boathouse in Forest Park?
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about it. Well, I was talking a little more about the paddle boats and the canoes and the stand-up thing. They're offering other stuff.
It's
Sugar Fire's there.
Sugar Fire. It's,
can't go wrong.
Yeah, and a guy named Jack McMurray is the chef on board, and he's a wonderful chef, extremely talented. He's taken some of the Sugar Fire items and some of the things that he has... Literally won chili. He won the Vail Chili Contest 3 years in a row with his chili recipe, which is on the menu now.
Awesome.
And he's got a sticky spare rib recipe. I said, this is the best. I mean, I'm just licking my fingers, and it's just so good. And he said, that's a 20-year-old recipe that I perfected in Vail as well.
Well, this is George Mahey of St. Louis Magazine, the dining editor. I know he's making your mouth water. So, I mean, this is what I do, is I steal his expertise. We sit him down here, and we go through the lightning rod of everywhere I need to go. So,
yeah, I mean, but the thing, I can't emphasize how cool Boathouse is, because they... there was a problem there. It was like, it gets too crazy and too busy. The service wasn't so good sometimes.
It was always just a little bizarre.
Yeah.
Not like a real restaurant. It was always
it's really hard to plan for when, wait, the sun's going to come out.
We're going to get hammered.
We're going to get four times as many people today. And sometimes it's hard to adjust to that. But what they were going to do, this is a little behind the scenes info. They were going to do a fast casual situation where you walk up to a counter and get your food.
Right. And then you go sit.
And go sit down.
Right.
That solves a lot of problems as far as service and times. And they said, we've got to figure out. Here's how we do it. There was so much backlash. gosh, people wanted to be waited on. They wanted the experience that they were used to. So the kitchen doesn't allow for that. So what they're doing is they've got half the restaurant, most of the restaurant open, which the kitchen can service. But on these crazy days like today when there's people everywhere, they're going to have like food trucks in there, and they're going to have guest barbecue guys in there that kind of come on site for the day.
Oh, that's great.
And supply that kind of...
So people just walk in,
grab up and go, yeah, you want to go in and have a little picnic? Wait, they've got, you know, ribs and pulled pork from, you know, Pappy's or whatever today at the boathouse. So anyway, they've got this figured out. Otherwise, you know, it was going to be more of the same.
Right. Okay. Lightning round. We have a couple more minutes. Give me one or two more brilliant ones that everyone needs to go to.
You like pot stickers?
I do.
There's a pot sticker restaurant now.
Like all pot stickers?
Well,
mainly.
Mainly.
Okay, what's the
name? Because that's the problem. You go, I love pot stickers, but I can only eat, like, what, four?
Right, and then it's over?
right, and then you're kind of done with this. So, and the guy that started this, he's a pot sticker guy. He said he's been eating pot stickers since he was a kid. He made them with his grandfather. And that's just, you know, you get your passion sometimes at a young age. And his is pot stickers. So he opened this place in South City, and it's called Crispy Edge.
Okay.
Sounds like a pot sticker.
Sure.
But he's got pot stickers about 12 different ways, different doughs, different cooking treatments.
So you can do like small plates and like get a little bit of each?
Well, and what they do is, and again, he's open for breakfast too, so he's got breakfast, some breakfast pot stickers. But what they also do, they've got some soups that are garnished with pot stickers. They've
nice.
Got some salads that, you know, the same kind of thing. And I can't think of this one entree they have. But it's a, they've got entrees at night that are garnished with pot stickers. So
nice.
It's not all pot stickers,
right? But there's accents and there's other things.
Yeah, so you don't have to just go in and eat, you know, 20 pot stickers. But I forget what this thing is called, but it's got a skewer of pot stickers that's cantilevered over a side of ribs.
Okay.
And it's
that sounds like something I could really go for.
I think it's called the Stickersaurus.
Okay.
I think.
I support that. Okay,
if not, it should be.
Right. All right. Well,
that place is only open on Friday night and Saturday day and Sunday. So they haven't expanded their hours yet. Again, these guys he's got a big wholesale business selling pot stickers. So the restaurant is kind of almost a marketing tool.
And they're
almost
feeling
in
their
the
way.
Side.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm sure when people start beating down the doors that he'll open it on a more frequent basis.
All right. Well, we probably have time for one more. Give me one more flash place I have to go.
New. How about, you like Mexican food? Everybody,
yes.
Everybody likes Mexican food. And this one came with a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth because the Damon Oyster Bar closed.
Right. I was talking about that, and that was sad.
And that was sad. And everybody loved the Oyster Bar. Nobody could afford the Oyster Bar because the oysters were wonderful.
They were real. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they bought them in small batches, and they got them in from different places. And consequently, you know, a dozen oysters was $48. And
right.
You're not going to get a second dozen, you know, most of us. You don't want right. to spend, you know, $300 on a couple dozen oysters. So it wasn't workable for them, really. And they were looking at different ways to, how are we going to make this work? Because it's such a cool corner with those windows
it
that
is.
Open up and kind of cantilever out. It's just it's an awesome patio. Anyway, the Damon neighborhood didn't have any Mexican places.
So why not?
The chef there was adept, and he spent a lot of time in California, and he kind of cooked this kind of stuff for the staff at the Damon Oyster Bar. So it was kind of a logical
progression. Yep, nice.
And it's not just Mexican; it's more Spanish and Latin American. And there's other he drifts.
What's it called?
He goes down other streets besides burritos
Mexican.
And tacos. But anyway, it's really cool. It's not expensive like the other place was, and I think it'll be a really good addition to the neighborhood. It's called Barrio. Sorry,
Barrio.
I don't think I even said the name. Barrio, but it's right where the Oyster Bar used to be. Those are the hits pretty much from April. But
now, do you foresee a lot of new stuff coming? I mean, is this trend still continuing, do you see? It doesn't seem to be stopping, does it?
Yeah, no, it's not stopping at all. It's restaurants tend to open at this time of year. They like to, you know, hit the it's either this, you know, great spring patio season, or you'll see a lot in the in September, October, trying to capitalize on the holiday season. And then there's usually a lull in January and February.
Right, which
really,
makes sense.
There really wasn't that much this year. It slowed down a little bit, but anyway, the openings for May and June are you know,
looking
we're right
strong.
There with them. Yeah, it keeps me busy 24/7. So it's
all right. One flash question. I'm going to put you on the spot. Best patio in St. Louis to eat.
Oh boy, that's tough. There's so many. My boss asked me that, and I gave him I think a 6-way tie. But
we gotta hurry. You get one.
Okay. It's a Wednesday night patio only.
Okay.
It's called Wine Wednesdays at Oliva on the Hill.
Oliva.
It's the coolest place ever.
Okay. On that.
Only on Wednesdays.
Only on Wednesdays. My spirit animal, George Mahey, St. Louis Magazine dining editor. Get the Bible, get the dining, get it. So glad to have done the last 2 hours. This is Jane Duker on KMOX at your service.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.